Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody back to Mission Accepted Podcast. Thank you so much for being the best podcast audience ever, because you guys click and send information and tell me what kind of shows you want and what you want to hear. You're sharing this. We're getting such great feedback. Thank you so much, because really this is a platform for people to come be inspired, learn what it's like to be in the crazy world of entrepreneurship, being an entrepreneur. Creatives, the most amazing singers, writers, directors, artists are coming onto the show and sharing how they made their break, including self-funding media like radio hosts and TV hosts and, oh my gosh, podcast hosts. So we have a week for Gen Zs. I know, right? The Gen Z generation, they are breaking into entrepreneurship like never before. And there is so much that all the generations can support and help each other with. So if you're with us today, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Here's a topic that we all love sometimes, and that's talking about money. And I think we love talking about money, depending how much of it we have, or what it's creating in our life, or if it's a strain and we want to learn how to have some, or we have some and we're not sure how to manage it. Money is energy. It flows. Sometimes we're abundant. Sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're asking. Sometimes we're dividing. Money within itself can trigger all sorts of emotions and all sorts of feelings for people. And it can be a really great conversation, or it could even get a little heated. Money, sometimes we embrace it, sometimes we avoid it. It's like it's got its own little plethora. It's like when I think of money, it's like got this octopus legs. So we have a guest today that's very, very well versed. Never mind, it's part of his name. We have Noah Rich Lundy on the call today, or on the podcast today, that's going to share with us, you know, his plethora of experience when it comes to the relationship with money. Really, and what he feels is people's best moves, and some information that you might actually find quite surprising, things that you probably hear a lot of that you should be doing that he has another perspective on. And you should listen to this gentleman, because he actually had a lot of control at one point with the New York Stock Exchange. I never forgot about learning that about him. He actually had keys to the server room to the New York Stock Exchange. I think he had a lot of power in his hands. Anyways, Noah, thank you for coming on to Mission Accepted. And tell us a little bit about you. Tell us how you fell in love with money.
Well, I mean, my racist comment in that section is I fell in money because I'm Jewish. You know, my grandfather, we always had money around. It was always a topic of discussion. We're one of the few families that didn't have the hangups about how to talk about money all the time from the start we talk. And luckily I had good education from the background. A lot of the time what I talk about, I say, what do you think about every day? What do you use every day? What do you always want to find more of, never seem to have enough of, and are always worried about making more of, but never learned about in school? And the answer is money. And that's like literally what I do is I try to fill that gap from what you should have learned in my opinion, what you should have learned in school and what you should know now. So, and I do that kind of like as a financial coach. That's really what I call myself. I do it from a coaching educational aspect. And the reason for that is like, I really want to help people get to a place where they're moving their money forward. And having that conversation is always like, sometimes it's really difficult for people, and they don't want to talk about how much they have. They're nervous about even letting their spouse know what they're doing with their money. So that comes on a lot. But really my goal is financially independent families. I talk mostly about a financial independence number, what you actually need to have, how much money you need to have to retire. So when you say financial independence, most people are like, I don't, you know, what is that? What does that mean? How much money do I have to have? And a lot of people don't understand that if you start at a young enough age, you really, like $100 a month will make you a millionaire in 35 years or 45 years or even, you know, 55 years at the most out. You know, you can definitely make that kind of money for very little money in the beginning. But if you don't have that time in the market, you don't have that time investing in the things that'll make you money, it kind of does that. A lot of what I get, one of the neat things, I was just on a crypto conference yesterday. I went to a crypto conference, and the crypto conference, it was like the surprising thing to me is that most people who are interested in crypto have very little financial education. And really, it's like, that is the most important place to have some kind of, if you're going to invest your money, you want to get some kind of financial education. Do you want to know what you're doing with your money? And that's really a big piece of what I try to do is like, just give you that education. So whether you're investing with me directly or you're investing with someone else, you know why you're investing, you know what your goals are. So that's really a big piece of what I do. So,
well, here's something that I'd like to talk about because, you know, my mother was a credit manager for Carter. She was quite, I would say, thrifty. I was raised with that money doesn't grow on trees. I mean, my undoing of that, and, you know, nothing against my mother. I mean, it was generational. That's just kind of what it was. And, you know, we were raised with wieners and no beans, you know, single mom doing the deal. Yeah. And so she was quite frugal with her money, and rightfully so. And so some of the things that, I mean, I have never really heard your financial number before. And I'd love for you to explain that to people, because I think that for the most part, we all want to be financially free, which is this explosion of, you know, side gig economy and new economy. And you got 18-year-olds like my son wanting to have his own business because of the idea of being able to control your own financial outcome. But really, what is a lot of people know credit score, but what is your financial independent number? What does that even mean?
Right. So it's actually a pretty simple equation, but it's very individual. And it's basically how much do you need to live on every month? And when you're financially independent, so there's kind of financial independence, financial freedom. So financial independence is literally having enough money in a growth account or in an account where that much money is coming in passively every month to pay your bills. So a financial independence number is, what is that number? What is your monthly amount that you need to pay your bills every month? And, you know, hopefully debt-free, hopefully moving you to a debt-free place, hopefully moving you to all those things. But right now, how much do you need every month to pay those bills every month and not worry that that money comes from, if you get hurt, it's still coming. If you're unable to work today, or you have to go on vacation for a family member or whatever it is, or you got to go take care of your sick mom or whatever that happens in life, that you have that money coming in, that's a passive income. That's your financial independence number. Financially independent means basically you're not working for your money. Your money is working for you. So what level is that? What number is that? And again, it's not too hard to calculate what it is. But the biggest place where people get the most hangups is what their interest rate that they're receiving is. So if you're reading the bank and you're making 0.25% on your money and you've got $1 million, you're not near your financial independence number. If you're getting 9% on your money and you've got $1 million, you're getting your $5,000 a month. Like, you know, that number is a much different place to be at, as is like, dealing with life insurance and things like that. I talk about what people do with death benefits, and everybody's like, I'm going to pay off the house. And I'm like, no, take money out of a growth account every month that grows. You'll take out the same $500,000 you're paying off the house with, but that house will be paid off and you'll still have $500,000 left at the end. So really talking about that in that kind of way. So,
okay. So just to kind of reiterate, cause so your financial independent number is a number that no matter what happens, you are still receiving enough income to be able to cover your life expenses as you've budgeted out.
Yep.
So I can hear the thousands of people that listen to our show and they're going, how do you do that? Because you shared something that was pretty, you know, I would think most Canadians would not know this to be true. So you just shared that Canada has the largest debt per capita worldwide.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
your quest.
Canadians, yeah.
Yeah. So your quest is to help that happen. So, I mean, our show is international, but let's just say that I can hear the Canadians screaming right now. So they're like, so how do you do that in trying to maintain your lifestyle or the needs of what you've got going on? Or a lot of people that are on our show and listen to our show are entrepreneurs and they're making their way and they're pouring their money into businesses or they're pouring money into this. And where do you find the money or what, where do you start with people, Noah?
So like it's usually the first thing I do is I start with a goal. I start with that financial independence number. So I talked about, I mentioned financial freedom. Financial freedom is having more than enough money to pay your bill and then go do some extra stuff that you want to do. That's really what financial freedom is. So, and working towards that is, it's like building a house. So I akin it to building a house or martial arts. This is like, you're never going to do it all at once. You can't, like rarely ever are you going to have, okay, I'm going to have $2 million tomorrow. Like you win the lottery, awesome on you, but it's not very many people that do that. It's not very many people that come into a giant inheritance tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing that allows that to happen. It's about slow, definitive accumulation towards a goal. It's martial arts. It's building a house. It's, you got to have a good foundation. You have to start with your building blocks and you have to build it forward. If you're going to do martial arts, again, that's my favorite thing. So it's always like, you don't learn how to do Kung Fu in a day. It's not Matrix. You can't plug in and get it. It's doing this 10,000 times to get this right every day. And it's just making sure you do a little bit every day to get you to that place. Weightlifting, martial arts, any kind of thorough practice of what you're doing to become better at what you want to do. That's the same as finances. So finances require a small amount of discipline every day, brushing your teeth every day, 15, 20 minutes of paying attention to it, gives you massive rewards later in your life. It fixes all the problems that are going to come forward because you've spent a little bit of time on it every day. And, you know, and I do that with my clients. I don't do it daily with most of my clients, but it is like weekly, monthly, and then every 3 months, every quarter, I'm going to check in with a client and say, hey, this is where you are. Is there anything that you want to change? Does any new thing happen to you? What's going on? And mostly I do that through emails and stuff now because yay for internet and being able to do mm-hmm. this practice long term. But it's again, it's that steady practice to work on what you're doing now every day to get to a place where you're in a better financial position. And it's a lot of little conversations like that too. So.
Well, and I think that's really
answer your question.
No, it does answer my question because that's what people need to know. And because it seems like such a big chunk. And I love the fact that you call yourself a financial coach. And the reason why is because, you know, statistics show. And honestly, ever since I was young, and I'm sure like everybody, who wouldn't want to win the lottery? Like who wouldn't want to win the lottery? It feels very much like a lot of burdens would be lifted. I think, especially for entrepreneurs. You know, would be lifted. But they show, statistically speaking, that the amount of people that win the lottery, was it within 3 to 4 years, actually have less money than they did before. Within 2 years, they have less money than they did when they won it. And why is because their mindset, they won money, but they don't have the educational piece on how to, one, deal with the money. And they always say, if you can't, I used to tell my kids when they want money, I'm like, if you can't manage 10 bucks, you can't manage 10,000.
Yeah.
Like, because it's about the education piece. And like you said, a lot of us didn't get it, or you got raised with things like money doesn't grow on trees or da 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 da. The whole idea around pay yourself first sounds really good until you don't have it or you don't think you have it.
Right.
So you need coaching alongside that experience. So even if you win the lottery, it's still a advice. People are like, oh yeah, I would get some advice. Well, you better get some advice beforehand because you need to know how to deal with that.
Yeah.
So I love that. It's kind of using that slight edge philosophy.
Yeah, it does run into that. And it goes back to that the little comment I made about, you know, if you get a death benefit, most people, like when I hand out death benefits, the first thing a family's going to tell me is they want to pay off the house. They want to pay off all the debts. And I'm like, no, let's not do it that way. Let's make it so that those bills are getting paid by the money you're taking in every month. You will withdraw that same amount of money over the next 25 years that you would be paying off that amount. and just on the capital gain, just on the gain from your investment and having the right investment for you. And that's a lot of things. Is like, if you took $1 million and you just put it in the bank and you just took the interest off of it, even at 0.25%, you know, you're still going to have more money every month than you ever had coming in before, and you'll never touch the principal. It'll never grow at 0.25%, but you'll stop spending money the same way. And it's really that accountability, that kind of thing. And I mean, you've got to work on your budget. You got to work on your debt, you know, getting rid of your debt. And that's a big piece of like what I said is coming up here was a big piece of like, well, I came up here for Kia, but outside of that,
it's love of money, my friend. Love of money is
it's both motivators. And that gets into it is a lot of times what the, you know, when there's a problem in a relationship, 90% of the time it's money. And when it's not, it's sex. And most of the problems with sex are alleviated by money. So there's honestly like it makes your spouse a lot more happy when there's no money worries. Like you have a lot more freedom to do a lot more in your life when money isn't your big concern. And getting people to a place where their finances are in, they, even if it's not, I don't have that much money today, but I know that in 30 years I'll be fine. Right. Even that creates a much more breathing room in a relationship and much more breathing room in anything else. And that's why I'm a coach and not anything else, because I talk to people about that. You know, if you go to the bank, they're not going to tell you, oh, well, you know, if you're having problems at home, how's your money situation? I'm going to start there. And that's really like, you know, I want to see happy couples. I want to see happy families, but I know that that's a big piece. And working through that with people is important to me. So if I'm willing to take you on as a client, eventually we're going to be friends. And that's really like, I honestly will not work with someone that I feel isn't compatible with me as a person, because if I can't help you get to a better place, then I don't have that conversation. I can't have that conversation with you, because that's the way I help people. And
right.
You know, it's.
So, yeah, it's like having the right doctor.
Yeah,
it's like exactly. Having the right. Yeah. It's like having the right marketing agent. It's like having. It's like selling the right product.
It's it's your business partner. Like for lack of a better term, when we're working on your finances from this point forward, we're business partners.
Yeah.
Whether we want to be or not, I'm helping you get to a place where your finances are going to be better in the next 35 years. If you don't trust me and you don't think that I'm the guy to do that, I can't help you. So you got to find somebody that you do trust and you do feel that way. And most people are like, they'll switch advisors based. If they'll switch it. 58% of people want people who want an advisor who helps them get better tax advice. You know, like they're willing to switch out of who they have because the tax advice, and most people's most trusted advisor is their CPA, but most CPAs don't have a mutual fund license, an insurance license. They aren't registered, you know, fiduciaries. They don't, you know, they're there to do your books. They're due to do your taxes. They're not really giving there. I mean, and nothing against any great CPAs. I've worked with some fantastic ones that referred me as the person to contact when they wanted to do stuff. And that's a great place to be in too, is having that relationship with your people. But if you're the most trusted person and you don't, and all you know is the bean counting of the number, it's very hard to get to a place where you're actually helping them get better advice. And
well,
that's a thing. So
the other thing, I mean, and I know because we've been hanging out and we're friends, and I can say we're friends, and there's things that you get to know about each other, and there's things that they wouldn't know. Like, you know, you probably know that my daughter's going to have her second child. You probably know that what my daughter does for a living. You probably know that I have an 18-year-old that's sucking financial because he's starting his first business. There's things that you know that person doesn't. And so I always say, never go to your banker and ask about your marriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because you don't know what their marriage is like, or even if they've been married. And so But I want to address something. I think we've kind of shared that, but I want to address something because you have a really interesting take on insurance.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I think when most of us make purchases, we make purchases based on people's advice. We know that we need to get life insurance or critical illness or, you know, all these things. We know we need to. And then we kind of take the advice of whoever we're talking to at that time, or my sister-in-law gave me some, the name of her advisor, and she's got this and it's good for them. What's your, you know, enlighten us on your thoughts around insurance needs.
Okay. I can get in trouble for this, so be careful. So I got to be careful.
Well, no.
I gotta word it. I have to word it carefully.
No.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a generic answer.
Yeah.
In New York, which is the only place, in North America that has a self-governing insurance council. So most everywhere you go, the insurance council is mostly filled up with insurance companies. So New York doesn't have that. New York has some of them, but it's not the majority. So New York is the only place where there's a buyer beware notice against universal life. Now, it's a little different here in Canada than it is in the States. Actually, it's a lot different here in Canada than it is in the States. But universal life is an investment policy it's sold as an investment policy wrapped with a life insurance policy. Life insurance in and of itself is simply is a replacement of income. When I talk about life insurance, I want you to buy term life insurance, and I want it to be temporary. I want you to invest your money. So it's called buy term and invest the difference. It's many people have talked about it in this way. And what I want to see people do is I want to see whole life and universal life, for lack of a better term, go away. I would love it if I had the authority to make sure that those things weren't sold anymore. I don't. All I can do is show people how they're not good savings vehicles, how they're not really investment vehicles. I've seen so many time and time again where I go in and look at a policy and I see where somebody is not going to have insurance properly in 65, 75 years. They're not, the savings isn't going to grow. When you buy a whole life policy, it's you in 90% of the time, it's have the death benefit or the cash value, not both. So that really, like, that savings investment isn't yours. It's the thing. You're borrowing against your own money when you borrow money from your investment account. You're taking an interest loan against something you have. I don't agree with that either. So kind of, if you're buying term policy that's banded out so that you have coverage that drops off as you gain your mutual fund license, as your mutual funds grow, as your other things grow, your investment account grows, your investments grow, and you have more money liquid, that's really what insurance is for, because you should be able to be self-insured. Now, at a wealthy level, and when you have millions, then you buy insurance to protect your mind, not your life. And that's another kind of aspect of what you're doing. And yes, whole life insurance and universal life insurance will give you a tax break, but there are other way better tax breaks available to you, investing in your TFSA, your RRSP, doing things like, there are so many places where you can put money away, even open in corporate investment accounts for people that have their own, you know, corporation that, you know, like your son's starting a business, you have your own businesses, you should all have corporate investments, you know, like, so you're taking dividends from the company and it's tax-free and it's no capital gains and blah, blah, blah. So like really, like, how you're doing your investment is really about that. And again, getting to the CPA is going to tell you need life insurance. The life insurance agent is going to sell you the thing that makes him the most money 90% right. of the time. Unless he's dual certified like us, there's a lot of practice where you're not getting the best advice. He's going to sell you the thing that's most, and universal life is what makes every life insurance agent the most money. Right. They get paid the best out of that stuff. So is it better for the agent? One of the big things with me with life insurance is most often when you go buy life insurance, what's the question you hear? And I don't know if you know this or you've bought life insurance, but generally, when I ask that question, it says, how much money do you have to invest, to spend on life insurance? Like, that's not the question. The question isn't how much money do you have what's the most money you can afford to, so I can maximize the most money that, no, the question is, how much money do you need to have if you pass? What's your dime? What's the debt, income, mortgage, expenses, right? Those are the questions that you want to know. You want to know how much insurance you need to make sure your family is okay.
Right.
And that's really the question. This is like, is it going to cover your mortgage? Like most people are massively, most people have whole life or universal life are massively underinsured.
Right.
They're thinking that they're going to have this big, and I hear like, you're going to have a million, like we were just ripping one apart the other day for a client. And it's like, you're going to have $1 million. All the numbers, the guaranteed numbers, $90,000. The promise was $1 million. The guarantee was 90.
Right.
And that's really where I go, what the
heck? Yeah. So this is a prime example of why having a financial coach that has the information and at least the education to be able to bring this type of, you know, type of decision making for the client, right?
Yeah.
Available. So because for the most part, it's advice that comes from all sorts of different things, right? Yeah. And then of course, you know, sometimes it's hard to know what's right and what's not and what policy works, because it's not the same for everybody.
Yeah, I akin this business to taking a drink from a fire hose. I talk to people who I'm hiring into the business. I said, this business is like taking a drink from a fire hose. Try to take it in little sips. Don't try to get your face in the hose.
Yeah.
And that's why any relationship is like, I start off most of my relationships with my clients as, okay, start writing down a budget, start writing down every dollar you spend, start spending just in cash. Don't use your debit card. Don't use your credit card if you can for the first 2 months with me and get a real assessment of what your working capital is. Money coming in, money going out. You don't have to adjust how much you spend. I don't want you to worry about what you're spending it on. I just want you to write down how much you're spending in cash. And if you just spend cash, you're never touching that credit card. That gives you a real assessment of how much money you're spending every month. And that's really like, that's the start. Like, let's get there so that I can build the rest. Like, that's really the piece of it.
So when you say that, and then there's people like, so this can be a pretty engulfing conversation. I know that a lot of people, there's a lot of comparison. You know, I'm at this age, I've had my business this long, I should. I'm a parent, I should. I need to make sure I take care of them in the future. Like, there's a lot of shoulds, and honestly, sometimes a lot of shame around money and comparison and what we should have and what we don't and all that good stuff. And when you talk about the largest debt per capita, I'd love to explore if you have any you know, ideas on why that is for Canada. Not that the show's not global, but for those that are in Canada. So when someone's feeling those feelings, I think for the majority, people get frozen in time because they're like, I need to do something little, but, and especially as the clock starts to go, people think, oh, I'm 30, I should this by now, but I'm 40, I should this by now, or I'm 60. And oh my gosh, there's like, what's going to happen to me when I, how do you deal with that emotional piece?
Very carefully. I talk a bit about, I can't remember, its name is Anthony Robbins. Right. You should all over yourself, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That statement is you should all over yourself. That's a really dangerous conversation. It's like, I should be here. I should be there. I was like, none of that is really like, it doesn't help you. It doesn't help you to compare yourself to your neighbors. It doesn't help you to do any of that. Let's work with where you are and do a realistic look at what, and that's why I start with start figuring out how much you're spending every day in cash. Like start trying to pay everything like without credit cards, without, you know, going in. One of the big things that I find here, you mentioned what's going on with Canada, and it happens in the States too, but it's really big here, is a lot of people live on their equity line of credit, their home equity line of credit. There's an equity line of credit that people buy when they buy a house, they get it immediately, as opposed to there's a couple of things in there. Canada has an early buyout clause on mortgages. So if you pay your mortgage off too soon, you get hit with a penalty of 20 some odd thousand plus. And I'm like, okay, so that's got to go away. And my biggest personal crusade is if I ever get involved in politics, the one thing I'm going to run on is getting rid of property taxes for your home. Like, I don't believe people should be renting their home after they buy it. So property taxes for your single family dwelling that should not, you shouldn't have it. Business property taxes, those kinds of things, those should continue. Personal property tax for your single home, that goes away. But in that line, when you get a loan here, when you get that mortgage here, you're almost automatically gifted that home equity line of credit. And that home equity line of credit is usually enough that people start to use it for day-to-day living expenses. It is an instant credit card. It comes with something, a mundane 3% interest, a mundane 6% interest. And if you're not, you're already losing money to inflation, losing money to credit. And now we just hit 6%, 6.6%. Bad as it is in the States, but holy smokes, are we in trouble. You know, 90 years ago, things that cost a dollar are now cost a thousand, right? Like that's how much inflation hurts. It's just like people don't recognize that long-term and realistically the inflation number is muted because it's not real. It's not the real number. Like the cost of education went up 260% in 3 years. That's inflation. That's
right.
That's the reality of inflation. It's just like, there's nothing keeping up with that. What's the cap on how much things are costing in reality? You know, your milk going up by 3% a year is enough, but the reality is that the cost, most kids can't afford to not live at home anymore. Like your son, it's awesome that he's starting a business. Is he living at home? Because he can't afford a house.
Right.
35 years ago, our kids could afford to move out at 18 to buy their own place. We did. That was always, you never had to worry about going out and not being able to rent a house. Like you could even go into an apartment for, $500, a quarter. The old rule was 1/4 of your income should be your rent.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't exist. It's 90% of your income now, if not more.
Right.
If it's affordable at all, it's 90% of your income. It's 90% of your income. That's not a sustainable number. Like people think they can afford a house because they make $3,000 a month and they can afford a $2,800 house. You can't.
Right.
You cannot afford that house. You can't afford a $2,800. I don't care if it needs to be half. It needs to be less than half of your income because you got to survive. You got to pay the bills. You got to fix the house.
Right.
So there's all those kinds of conversations about where, so that HELOC that comes in with people's mortgage, that's what's creating that kind of, in my opinion, that kind of instant debt. I don't have proof of that, but every client that I have, that I run into that has debt, that's the first thing they have. That's the biggest debt that they have is they have a HELOC and they're living on it day to day.
Right.
And I think that that's a really, I'm opposed to HELOCs. I do mortgage insurance. I do other insurances. I do homeowners insurance, things like that. I want everyone out of debt. That's my biggest goal. And when you get into that, only spend cash, only use what you have. When you run out of money at the end of the month, you're going to use your credit card, but track that after. Track how much you're getting in cash. Like stop paying your credit cards for a month or two. It'll hurt your credit score a little bit. But it won't kill you, you're already in trouble. If we're talking about how much debt you have, and I'm telling you, you got to like reel in your debt. We're going to talk about fixing your credit score long-term, but in the short term, I want to see what you're spending, what your real zero is. So I talk to people about what their real zero is. That's how much money you're comfortable being. Things most people in Canada are at a negative number in real zero. Your real zero is how comfortable you are with how much money you have coming in versus how much you owe on a day-to-day basis. So your zero is like, my zero is really high. Like my zero is like, I get really nervous if there's less than 60,000 in the bank. I'm like, we got a problem. Like if I don't have that much cash in the bank, there's some major issues.
Right.
But most people's real zero is negative 25, negative 30.
Yeah.
Negative 25, negative 30,000 of debt, and they're sitting there and they're floating and they're like, yeah, I'm good. I'm like,
right.
I want to help you get out of that mentality right now. So at least your zero should be real zero. Like let's get you there, and that's sort of a conversation. And I don't judge people. Like a lot of people take it like, my daughter is very critical on me because she thinks I'm always judging her. And I'm like, I'm not judging you. I'm just trying to help you get to a place where you're in that space too, where you're in that ideology of what you could be doing versus where right. you are, you know, so.
And I think a part of it, so, and you know, hey, from someone who's got kids, you know, get someone else to talk to your daughter. That's the, you know what I mean? Like, I just took my son down to the conference that we done. I was in Dallas for a conference and I had people come up to me and say, oh my gosh, you know, you're so good at what you do. And I'm like, hey, I have an 18-year-old. Do you mind just telling him? Right. Just edify me to the 18-year-old because he's in business. And he's like, I know, mom, I know.
Yeah.
So my point being is, as you're listening to this, because I'm thinking about the listeners, and some of you are capturing all of everything that Noah is saying, because you've been versed and you've been playing around and trying to understand money and reading the books and, you know, maybe listening to some Anthony Robbins or some Kiyosaki or whatever it is that you're listening to, or you read The Wealthy Barber or whatever it is. And I think, or you are glazed right now, your eyes are glazed, your prefrontal cortex is starting to explode. You got a little bit of headache going on and you're feeling like, I don't know. And you're kind of doing that little spiral of, I thought I was okay, but now maybe I'm not. All of it is absolutely normal because it's a really highly charged conversation that, which is why we're having the conversation, which is why Noah's here today, particularly because culturally we adapt to what's going on culturally. And you just talked about the majority, and I would say it's pretty widespread, particularly with coming out of what we just came out of. People have debt load like they've never had before. And we're just grateful for surviving. You know, industries have closed, people have closed. And also our nervous system has taken a real beating, you know, just trying to adapt in the nervousness of not knowing what's going on. And what does that mean to me? And what does that mean to my income? And what does that mean to my spending? And, you know, there was all sorts of things that came out, like where people could defer their mortgage for a while or do this or send e-transfers with no fees and all of those things that came into play. So I find that we're still at this place where our nervous system is a little upheavaled. We also are really adapting. And when you say that there's a country that happens to have a higher debt ratio, I think it's that the whole country got comfortable with debt at some point, and somehow our friends have debt. So we have debt and everyone's have debt. And I can't, you know, when people are like, you have 3 months put away, and most of the people in the room are like, maybe, you know, or no one wants to talk about it. Everyone's like, yeah, I'm good. But maybe
I have 3 months on my HELOC. I have 3 months of room on my HELOC.
Yeah.
I've got 3 months of room on my HELOC. I got 30,000 left on my HELOC of 80,000, you know, it's like, eek, you know?
Yeah. So here's the thing, at different stages and at different ages, you have different needs and different concerns. The biggest thing is what I'm hearing you saying is, don't freak out about where you are. There's lots of reasons why people are where they are. Don't compare yourself to others. I always have a famous saying. It's like, don't compare your insides to other people's outsides, because you have no idea. You have no idea what's going on for them. I find that gratitude's a really good financial formula. Being grateful, just being grateful, and then taking that advice and taking a little bit of slow motion, but doing it with someone like yourself that can really walk you through. And I think the biggest thing that comes to me around finances, and again, I had a mother who would like drilled into my head, because she was a credit manager for Carter, right? And so she saw everything. Right. And she was like, get an RSP. I mean, I didn't know what an RSP was. I was like in my 20s. So like, go. And I you know what? I found a guy in a mall. He was in a mall and he had a table. And he was with a company, and I'm like, my mom wants me to buy some RSPs and mutual funds. Like, do you do that? And he's like, yeah, make an appointment. And so I went and bought stuff with him, right? And it was a really great thing. He's passed over now and I'm no longer with him, but it was a great first initial experience. But life happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes life happens to us. And I think that's why someone like yourself is so important, because you see people go through those life experiences and you can kind of walk them through.
Yeah, for sure. And I love doing that. Like, I love getting people. I'm one of the, like a lot of those people, like if you go to the mall and you want to do an investment account and open your RSP, they're going to look for you to have 500,000, half a million, a million, you know, a million, 2 million, 5 million. They have minimum numbers a lot now. I think some of the company's primary minimum investment amount is 50,000. I don't care. I like making millionaires. So I want to start with I want to start with high school students that have $100 a month to invest. I want to start with you as a person who is deeply in debt, has a bunch of problems with everything, and kind of get you out of debt so that all that money that you were paying for your debt goes to your investment account eventually. I want it to be something that we can build on for a long period of time. I want to work on getting you to a place where your finances, you know, if you start putting away $25 a month because you've never put away anything better, more, that's a fantastic start, because at least you're starting brushing your teeth every day as opposed to never brushing your teeth at all. And that, to me, is so much more important. It's just like, let's start with something. Now, that being said, I really do like my $1 million clients.
No, of course.
So, and I take very good care of them, but I don't pay more attention to my $1 million clients than I do my $25 clients. In fact, I probably spend more time working with my $25 clients than I do with my $1 million clients, because my $1 million clients know what I'm talking about. I'm like, hey, do this, this, and this. They're like, sure, no problem. And then it's done. They don't have to worry about it anymore because they're set. And those guys who only have $25, $30 a month, they need my, you know, my considerable attention to help them get to a place where they got that extra time. And I have my team, and I have my team doing a lot of that as well. I did say it, if I don't like you, I'm not going to work with you. Even if I give you to my team, you're still working with me.
Yeah. So,
don't, if you do reach out and you do end up doing that, don't take it personally. That's just part of the way the business works. But kind of working with people is really important, and making sure that that individual basis of moving forward is what you start with. So every individual is going to be different based on what they actually have. Right. So that's a big piece of it.
Well, and I think that it's actually quite enlightened of you to say, like, I don't know if we're the personality match, but I know somebody that is better suited for you from a personality standpoint, right? Like, because people need to have an emotional comfortability with the person that they're sharing their, you know, and I find money to be an intimate conversation.
Yeah.
It's you're sharing most people,
Most people are really like, I don't know, there's that old stigma, you're not supposed to talk about how much money you make at work to your other employees. And that's like, that's the employer talking, first of all. He doesn't want everybody to know how much everybody else is making. So don't pay attention to that at all. It's illegal for him to make that statement. Second, I would love to see money become the daily topic. I would love to see schools teach money. I used to go into high schools. I think I mentioned this in our last one. In New York, I used to go into high schools and talk to graduating classes. I love that. I love talking. My question when I walk into an auditorium full of high schoolers is to say, who wants to be richer than your parents? And wait to see how many hands go up. And like, and then you see the kids nudging the other kids and like, hey, he said something cool. So like that kind of thing. And it's not about dissing the parents. It's really just about their parents didn't get this education. If they did, I wouldn't be able to make them richer than your parents. Like, you know, that's the reality of the conversation is like, if the investment is a piece of where your business is and where your mind is and how you're getting yourself to the future, to your new zero. Like I said, bank account, I had 60,000 in my bank account. That's not true. It's an investment account. It better grow. It doesn't sit there. And that's really like, that was 30 years ago, right? My zero was 30 years ago. Whereas it was like, if I had less than 60 grand, I was freaking out. My grandfather told me, you need this much money every day to make sure you survive. This is how much money has to be in your account. And he drilled it into me. I was very lucky.
Right.
I was very, very lucky that my mother, on the other hand, was anti-wealth because of my grandparents, right? So my mother was like, if you have money, you're a despicable human being. And I came from that, and like, she taught me that, you know, hang out with poor people, they're going to be better people than the wealthy people that you hang out with. Meanwhile, I got into doing IT things for broker dealers and hedge funds in New York. And that was my start. I was in information technology before there was information technology, before it was an IT thing. And kind of that whole build of those are the people that I hang out with most. So my money mindset is built on what it takes to build wealth, what it has to have wealth, and what you need to do, and that you don't have to be a bad person just because you have a lot of money. It's right. about what you like. I can help a lot more people. And this was my biggest argument with my mother is I can help a lot more people with wealth than I can being poor. Like I can make a bigger difference. And that
it goes. Yeah, no, not to interrupt you, sir, but it goes back to that culture.
Yeah.
You know, the environment of which you were raised, the availability to information, the culture, the people that you associated with, the impression that you got. That's where I think all this comparison stuff comes in. And money, again, it's items, right? Someone sees somebody with an item, whether it's a purse or a car or a belt or a suit or what have you, and there's assumptions about money and all sorts of interesting things. It's funny. My mother wasn't like that, but she certainly was, you know, she had quite a bit of interesting impressions she made upon intern relationship to money. Well, but we work through those, right? We work through those. That's the educational part. So I know that we're coming to a close. We may have even run over a little bit, but that's good. That's good. Because this is a very in-depth conversation. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell people where to get in touch with you. If there's anything else that you want to say, and then I have one very important question I need to ask you at the end.
Sure. Reach out to Noah at Rich Lundy. No hyphen, no nothing, just noahrichlundy.com. That's it. That's my email. You can call me. I have an American and a Canadian phone number. My Canadian phone number, I don't know if I should do this in the podcast.
Well, you know what we're going to do? We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. And then people can just access it that way. And Noah Rich Lundy, L-U-N-D.
Noah. Yeah. Noah at Rich Lundy. Yeah.
Noah at richlundy.com. Awesome.
First name at my last name.com.
Right. With no hyphen.
No hyphen. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Anything else you'd like to share before we
wrap up? Tons. I got four or five hours more of conversation to go. You hit me on a subject. You started talking about money and I want to talk about my first three books from my grandfather. I got lots and lots more to go into, but no, I'll leave it all for now. So,
well, Noah, I think you've got a book inside you. Have you ever thought of writing a book? We should have that conversation.
I actually did. I was on a conference call a few days ago, and I have two books that I want to get done. One is like a fake history of me, and one is I want to do books about money and things like that. Regretfully, I am hands tied by the industry that I'm in. I have to fiscally report and do all kinds of sorts of things for doing that sort of thing. So I'm not legally, as far as I know, I'm not legally allowed to just go out and publish a book. It's kind of like being on a podcast. I have to get permission to be on the podcast. So.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I've got an amazing woman. When you do write your book or you're thinking of writing your book and you want to get it to market, she's absolutely incredible and awesome. And would be great. So here's the big question. Desert Island, you're heading out, you're packing up, just you and you, right? You're like, I got all my money in my bank and I'm going to go hit the beach and I'm not coming back. And there's no one else on the island, just you. And you've got room in your suitcase for one music album. Which one you taking?
Oh, smokes. That's tough. Which one? Uh-huh. Is it like one album of a collection of stuff?
No, my friend.
One album?
I could have said one song. I'm giving you a whole album.
Are you giving a whole album? It's going
to
be
this. You couldn't not go the rest of your life without listening to this album.
Well, regretfully, there's a few, but I'm going to, because of the moniker of work that is available, I will go with Queen because I can listen to Queen and over again, and I don't have to worry about it driving me crazy. It was always a good song. And there's always something eclectically different about everything I play. If I had multiple songs, I would choose a couple of different, like I would choose some Prince. I would choose some, you know, some Bay, yep. Or choose some other stuff. But for all said and purposes of one album, Queen.
Okay. Awesome.
Queen greatest hits. Let's just.
Queen. Yeah. Well, of course you're going to take the greatest hits because, you know,
I was listening to Alicia Keys'
greatest hits the other day.
Yeah.
And you know what? Not only do I just love music, and I think that entrepreneurs are creative and it's good for the mind and it's good for the soul. I think, you know, myself and my colleague, we're going to be heading over, you know, walking over Ireland. We're going to walk 10 marathons across Ireland, not for 15 months, people. We'll have all sorts of things that people can tap into, but it's supporting the music industry because awesome. I just think music's kind of like air. We all need it.
Yeah, thank sure. you. Put me in touch with that group. I'm interested in supporting that. That's
big. Yeah. You know what? Alicia Keys, her organization is the Recipitory charity at this point. There may be another one called She Is the Music, and it's a global music, but absolutely we'll line you up. Awesome. We will line you up. We will hit you up, my friend.
Awesome.
Noah, thank you. You always make me think. And I think that's important. And I love about you going into high schools because a lot of times, like you and I just talked about, we carry our parents' thoughts with us. And those thoughts can hold on to you for years. And you're trying to make money and you don't even know why you can't. Or you make money and the next thing you know, you're in debt. And you're like, how the heck is this happening? I'm making more money. How come this credit card's not going down? I'm making more money. And sometimes it's just belief or mindset or ideas. It's just, you got to snap that stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And talking about leveraging debt versus having debt and kind of stuff like that. It's just, there's so many conversations that are in there. It's just like, you can have debt, but it's better be leveraged. It better make you money. I can keep going.
I don't know. Okay. You know what? We're going to do a show called Leveraging Debt. Because you know what, when you say, seriously, because when you say leveraging debt and debt actually making you money, I remember a friend of mine was the first millionaire under 30 in Canada. And he also was in IT many years ago. And he said to me once, he goes, I told him what I wanted to do in my business. And he's like, okay. And so he talked to me about borrowing money. And I said to him, oh, I can't borrow money. He goes, if you don't know how to borrow money, you're never going to make what you want. You need to get comfortable with the idea of debt. And it all had to do with that leveraging piece. But for me, debt was a bad, like, oh, I'm a bad person, you know?
Yeah, we do an RRSP loan within our company. And that RRSP loan kind of leads itself to borrowing money to super fund your RRSP. It costs 4 to 5% and to get that, but I want to see you get 9 to 15% or some kind of decent return on it. And if you're not getting that, then you shouldn't do it. And it's kind of that conversation, how much money you're going to get back on your taxes by borrowing this money. Is it enough to pay off at least half of the money that you're doing? So on and so forth. So, and that's all about leveraging debt. That conversation comes along. We do a bunch of other things. And there's algorithms to help you leverage credit card debt. I highly recommend against it. I talk to people about doing their mortgages properly, and that's a piece of leveraged debt. But second houses, third houses, rental properties, that's all about leveraged debt. Borrowing other people's
money. That's our next show. That's awesome. Our next show. Okay. Thank you so much for being on the show today, everybody. Thank you so much for listening and viewing and sharing this. Please share this podcast because this is important information. People need to know it. Entrepreneur, not entrepreneur, creative, not creative. If you want to be on the show, contact us. Love to have you. Mission accepted. Noah, you've taken the mission clearly and you've accepted the mission and you are on the mission.
Very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being a guest. Thanks, everybody.